Papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Now, the Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where we talk about what's going on in newsrooms, about the ethical standards that guide the profession, and how well we may or may not be doing in measuring up to all of that with some veteran journalists in the room.
Ah!
That's our producer offering his commentary right away.
Indeed.
I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now publishing The Upstate American on Substack, a favored platform for a lot of folks these days. Next to me is Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette and former vice president of the New York Press Association. What's in your mind today?
You know, I thought I'd gotten used to the attacks on the press, but this week it seemed to ratchet it up to a level that going forward, I'm more and more worried about the attacks the Trump administration is making on the press and what is going to happen next.
Valid question, I think. Next to her on the end of the table is Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy. What
Hello.
Are you doing? Hello.
I'm interested also in talking about what Judy is mentioning because, you know, it's like, what the? Oh, yeah. And we also want to talk about the president and others' use of that F word.
Yes. And some other words in the convention of not allowing that on the airwaves. Our producer, Dave Gustina, would have figured out what to do about that.
He's
right,
cleaned
David?
Me up a couple of times.
Yeah.
I know exactly what we would have done about that, but I'm not going to give away my answer just yet. But I will say that I'm much more interested as the general population will be in a story about naughty bears.
Oh, naughty bears. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that. Naughty bears. There's a media topic for you. All right. We will get underway. You know, I do think that this question about the attacks on the media is a really valid one. The point that arises right now is because of the president being very upset about a classified report that was leaked initially to CNN and the New York Times revealing that the attacks on the three Iranian nuclear enrichment sites over the weekend did not, in fact, kill the country's nuclear program. The president had claimed right away while the B-2s were still in the air that it was complete and total obliteration. He was livid about that. The Secretary of Defense subsequently went on at a press conference and attacked the media. And I think it's just important for us to note that it is not, in fact, unpatriotic to report information from the administration that questions the extent of the damage to Iran's nuclear program. No one who reported the questions that were raised by the Defense Intelligence Agency, the questions that came out from Pete Hegseth's own shop, no one was attacking the pilots of the B-2 bombers. And as we move into this, and I think I'd like to hear your thoughts, I'd say there are two key issues here. First, the reporting by CNN and the Times noted that the question is first whether the bunker buster bombs, which were used in action for the first time, really did penetrate the Fordow nuclear facility, buried under hundreds of feet of rock and cement, whether they did in fact destroy the centrifuges. And second, and I think this is maybe the bigger issue, is whether the president of the United States is truly fulfilling his duties as president if he ignores evidence that the objectives were not fully met. And the wild reaction by Trump and his Secretary of Defense to the preliminary low-confidence Pentagon intelligence report that was reported fairly by the Times and by CNN, it creates another dangerous possibility, and that is that the president is pressuring the intelligence community to tailor its intelligence to meet his political needs. You know, it's one thing for the president to lie continually about domestic matters. We get that all the time, but we've grown accustomed to it, but if he's lying about matters of national security, he's taking our nation down a very dangerous road, and that is very much worthy of the clear-eyed attention of journalists. Is that what you were going to say, Judy?
Certainly. And I was at the point many times during this whole crisis about trying to figure out what I could believe and what I could not believe. What I am also concerned about is the conventional wisdom among journalists is, you know, it's okay for us to, as long as we don't steal classified information or obtain it illegally, it is okay for us to publish it. That is the conventional wisdom. That really is something that I expect the Trump administration to challenge, to prosecute journalists under the Espionage Act, because they could indeed do that. You know, the standards in Washington have been not to do that. There's been Department of Justice protocols that say we are not going to go after journalists and subpoena their records to find out where they got any information off. Hegseth, the defense secretary, has already launched an investigation into this leak. I think they're going to get much more serious about this, and I worry. It hasn't happened yet, but I seriously worry that that's going to happen.
Actually, prosecution of journalists.
Correct.
Yeah. And you say there's nothing to stop that.
I mean, they prosecuted Snowden. Now we can argue about whether Snowden was a journalist or even the WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. It got prosecuted under that. I mean, whether or not they were journalists is an issue of dispute. But even during the Pentagon Papers, it never reached that point and the administration backed off. But at the time, First Amendment advocates have expressed some concern that if a truly adversarial administration wanted to, they could at least push it. And we've seen the administration do this in other realms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think adding to the problem is the continued denigration and dismissal of the president of the media. He wants the world, the public, American citizens, everyone to not trust the mainstream media, that they're lying. He started this in his first term. I could hardly believe my ears saying that in the first term about us being the enemy of the public. And now he's not holding anything back in his attack of the media. He's telling the people, don't believe what they're telling you. And this is that coupled with the possibility of prosecution is really, really worrisome.
But David, I want to ask, isn't questioning power fundamentally our duty?
Yeah. The problem is that you've got a subject who's a moving target. So whenever you ask him a legitimate question, he moves and changes it to something else. He switches the focus or he cherry picks a piece of information. Oh, no, that report, the defense report that they weren't sure. But that was before other people on the ground were there and got to see more. And other reports came out from the Israeli defense, which seemed to show that it was obliterated.
In attempting to denigrate the reports, he could have said, well, these were early reports. They were inconclusive. They're not complete. And I'm confident that we'll see when there's new reports or as the investigations are continuing, we will tell the public exactly what happened.
It's
but
part
he
of
just
a weave.
Chose to say that's a lie and go after the leakers.
Because he has turned it into a story about journalism as opposed to a story about the attacks on Iran.
Well, he starts immediately. I couldn't believe when I heard this. Oh, fake news, CNN. Aye. Here we go. Wait till you hear this question. Before the question is even asked, he's framing it like it's going to be either an attack on him, a stupid question. Whatever it is, he is a master at this. Then he gives everything nicknames. So it's fake news, CNN. It's the failing New York Times. And those things resonate in the mind. Just as a human being, you don't...
They're catchy.
They're catchy. And what are you trying to do? You're trying to get people to remember your narrative. And he creates and weaves and moves and dodges. And suddenly the narrative is all about how he's angry at the press and everyone. And then even in NATO, it's about how they're all being nice to President Trump because he's upset.
It makes you think that some Democrats ought to take a cue from that in light of the fact that the president doesn't read, we are told, and there are now efforts to give him his national security briefing in the style of a Fox News video presentation. Maybe he should get his own nickname, you know, Dumb Down Don, something like that.
How about this line, which says everything? You should really say how great our soldiers and our warriors are.
Oh, and Hegseth is telling reporters they should be waving the flag. Let me be clear. Reporters are patriotic. We don't wave the flag.
And you notice that nobody at these press conferences, none of the media, maybe they feel they can't do this. They don't say, we are a legitimate source, sir.
But Caitlin Collins did say, I think everyone appreciates our soldiers and warriors.
Yes.
So she did stand up and say, that's a red herring you're throwing out there, Mr. President. But it won't stop him from changing the subject and using the media as the foil in the process.
And it deflects from the actual issue here, is whether or not the mission or the goal, which was to obliterate the nuclear capabilities. Could I also say, in terms of diction, can he stop using such superlative words? I mean, they mean nothing now. Big, beautiful bill. Obliterate. Destroy.
It's all hyperbole.
And then we're repeating it. I cringe every time somebody uses that term about that terrible bill.
Well, actually, it is the official title. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That is the formal name of the legislation. And so you have to cite it that way, I suppose.
Well, you don't have to exactly. You could say the budget bill.
It actually was carrying a step beyond what Joe Biden did in calling the Inflation Reduction Act the Inflation Reduction Act, right, when it was actually a climate change
point
bill.
Point taken.
Yeah.
Well, and wasn't there a bit of a contradiction while he was attacking reporters? All of a sudden, he turns at one point, and there's a Ukrainian reporter who's asking a question. And then I started seeing reports of how wonderful and sensitive he was and emotional he got. I think you'd have to watch it to see if you believe that. And was engaging with this Ukrainian reporter. This after what he did with Volodymyr Zelensky in the White House and how he has seemed to side more with Russia than Ukraine. Now he's, you know, empathetic towards Ukrainian reporters.
I think that we need to bear in mind some really interesting words by Jake Tapper in response to this. He talks about what journalists have hopefully learned through the last 50 years of U.S. history. He said, history has taught us that the most pro-service member action we can take is to ask questions of our leaders, especially in times of war. That, for journalists, is the height of patriotism. You know, that's really our role, questioning authority.
And just because, you know, he wants us to say nice things about the war and the warriors, that he contradicts himself by saying he's the peaceful president. He wants peace everywhere. He wants to stop wars. And yet he just engaged in one.
You know, Tapper is very articulate, and he does a nice job of laying out the case for journalists. I also hope that upper management gets involved in this as well. And we need to speak out as an industry more forcefully about what's happening. Maybe it's not the megaphone that Tapper is, but we've become complacent with this.
That's a great point. CNN needs to speak up. The New York Times needs to speak up. Not that they don't. And you also don't want to be forced to have to react to every time that you're criticized. But this was really big, I thought.
This is huge. And of course, we shouldn't expect CBS to stand up for its people. It's worth
hope.
Yes, as we sit here, there are questions as to whether there will, in fact, be a settlement with the president in his lawsuit against CBS. The independent arbiter has recommended a $20 million payment, and there is every indication that that will happen and that, therefore, the lawsuit will go away. But the president apparently is insisting on an apology. The question you'd have to ask is, for what? CBS did not, in fact, do anything that was unethical or inaccurate in its reporting, but it just reported accurately. And it seems as though the business element that controls CBS is going to have to pay some money to the president to get the bully to back off.
It's self-censorship, isn't it, Rex? And that's the dangerous one. You know, it's not a direct attack. It's a threat to sue, a lawsuit that any journalism organization in the past would have gone after and tried to get dismissed. And now, in this climate of fear, self-censorship. Because, in large part, there's profit at stake.
Exactly.
And you've got to wonder what's going to happen with 60 Minutes going forward. I mean, they've lost their key producer. I mean, we should watch it. It's hard for us to judge what stories they aren't doing when they aren't doing them. You know, it's hard to judge. But I certainly hope that they get their footing back once this merger is approved.
Well, while we're talking about the president's rage, by the way, we ought to get onto the topic that Barbara wanted to talk about, the president dropping the F-bomb on camera. What do you think, Barbara?
I think that we need to let the camera roll and let the sound go. Let the people hear exactly what he's saying and how he's saying it. And it's different in print, I think, that we should clean it up in print. It might be different in radio. Be interested to hear what David says about it.
Isn't it, David, that there is the FCC sitting on your shoulder?
Absolutely. I mean, your license is at risk whenever something like that goes out over the air. But this isn't a news context. This is the president of the United States, arguably the number one newsmaker of all. And if it's the president that's saying it, we are allowed to air it.
Ah.
But we have to be careful that we don't sound like some kind of hypocritical non-Puritans or Puritans, because the F word is commonly used by lots of people across lots of venues, and it's used by journalists. It's used by ordinary people. It's used by presidents. It's Puritans. Not used by everyone here.
Let me speak for the Puritans, because this is the president of the United States, and there are children out there listening to this. That's one of the reasons I think newspapers are careful about what they publish, especially on their front page. The fact that the president of the United States said this, and I know that Lyndon Johnson was a foul-mouthed guy. You know, I'm sure every president has been, but the fact that he did it to cameras, to microphones, and you know what? And it wasn't even that. People say it's important because it gives a sense of the importance of what he was trying to say. I disagree. I think he's just throwing it around, and I don't think he should have.
I think it's important that people hear it, not because it was important that he said it, not because of the incident that he's trying to say was so important, but the fact that he could not control himself. That the coarseness, that even if that's commonly used in private conversations, you should have the sensibility and the self-control.
He's the president.
To not use it. And the fact that he doesn't have that self-control, he doesn't have that censorship of his own verbiage, that people should hear it.
What I find really, really interesting is, and Rex will always talk about it, it's not the media. We're not all one thing. And this proves it. I mean, you could see different outlets. Not only different outlets, like, say, you know, NPR, which did bleep it, but I believe it's that the New York Times in one area did not, in another area they did, depending on whether they were online or in the paper or whatever. So, you know, you're always making a judgment of what your audience will accept whenever you put something out like this. But I would like to believe if it was WAMC, not NPR, but WAMC that was responsible for airing this national audio, that we would let it go. I'm sorry, but the kids probably hear that word from their parents and in movies and everything else all the time. And while I'm sensitive to it, I'm not when it comes to the president of the United States for a lot of the reasons, Barbara, that you gave.
Yes, that's cut and dried, because you don't want to be coarse. If the president is coarse, that's one thing. But when we repeat what he said, that makes us coarse.
Except we make judgments all the time about what's appropriate for our audience in choosing photographs, for example. You know, we've talked about this often on this program, not having pictures showing brutality, showing victims of heinous crimes, usually, and regarding, in a sense, the sensibility, a sort of societal sensibility, which is always shifting, which is different now than it was 50 years ago. So maybe we're getting to the point, I don't know, I want to stand with Judy a little bit on behalf of the kids here and say, you know, there are places where it's appropriate and places where it's not. But when the president does it, boy.
What about the kids in Mexico? So, for example, it's cultural. And we've talked about this before. You go down and you see a lot of these Mexican newspapers and you'll have a car accident on a major highway and they're showing you the pictures of the bodies and dismembered and other things right on the front page. So the idea that the standards are universal, it's divided by so many levels, including cultural level.
Yeah. You know, I find there's not that much difference between spelling out the whole word or just writing the first letter and then blank, blank, blank. It's the same thing to me. Kids are going to look at it and say, well, what's that word? And then they're going to know what word it is. It seems like, you know, we're dancing with this and maybe all words are okay. But I don't think it's ever acceptable for the president of the United States to say that in public.
And by letting the people know that he did it, how should the media?
I think we should have a talk with the kids and saying, see what that guy did? He needs to have his mouth washed out with soap.
Excellent. I was raised that way. You know, I was such a naive kid that when a little friend of mine, Tommy Allen, told me that the word ship, S-H-I-P, was a bad word, I started using the word boat all the time instead. I would never use the word ship. Tommy was confused, and so was I.
You might have misheard.
Wow. You sure you don't want me to edit that out?
Oh, ship.
Rising tide lifting these boats, and folks. This is the Media Project for Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick and Barbara Lombardo and our producer, Dave Gustina.
One more question about the F word is that once the president has used it and it's been reported kind of blithely, now what do we do when lots of people start dropping the F-bomb?
Mm-hmm.
That is a problem.
Where do you draw the line?
And it's extra work to have to beep something out, isn't it?
Well, it is. But at the same time, like on live radio, for example, our VoxBox program in the afternoons is live, but it's delayed by, I forget what it is, 12 seconds, something like that, because we have a delay system in place. So if the host is listening, they will hear it in real time. And if the F-bomb comes out, they hit the red button and it gets dumped and no one hears it on the air.
Hey, as long as we've got you on this, are there really seven words?
George Carlin, you're referencing, the wonderful comedian, gosh, do I miss him these days. He put out those seven words. I don't know that it's officially those seven words. What it is when the FCC responds to letters that come from the audience, right? So someone writes and says they said this.
I think there were seven words that you couldn't say.
Hey, why don't we list them right here?
And see what the FCC says.
I'll have to do my homework, or maybe one of our listeners can write them in.
I think we've got it figured out. Let's switch and pick up one of these other great topics that we want to talk about, because there's a new study which shows something that I think a lot of us are encountering. And that is news alerts. Mm. You know, that what we used to call in the business push notifications, that is sending stuff to people when they are not actually looking for news. It is sometimes called the battle for the locked screen. When your screen is locked, suddenly up pops this news alert. And there's a very interesting study from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism. 79% of respondents do not receive any news alerts during a typical week. And 43% of those report having actively disabled such notifications. So people are actually saying, I don't want to get any news. That's I don't right. want to have anything.
You know, I get my news alerts typically Saturday evening around 8:30. That's when they all come. I don't get them any. Well, every once in a while I'll get if there's really important news. But they're not alerts. This is not news. I always yell at the phone telling the news organization that's sending me this alert. This is not news. This is a feature you're going to run for Sunday. Give me a break. I do not want to be alerted to this.
I do get news alerts. I get a lot. That's actually how I think I find out most of my news. So how do you know when there's news?
It pops up on my freaking screen.
That's what I mean.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. There's children that might be listening to this.
They pop up on my screen.
That's what I mean. That's an alert, though.
I signed up for alerts, and typically the alerts are about 2 minutes behind the blue sky or those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
So they do me no good.
Huh. Well, I mean, it's a difficult situation for publishers, for those whose revenue stream depends upon an audience paying attention. And I might differentiate that from not-for-profit, which can draw, you know, to a certain extent that's necessary. But if you have great support from the community, you don't care quite as much about what your numbers are. But if you've now lost the revenue from circulation, which used to provide 25% of a newspaper's revenue, for example, the advertising revenue has gone down so much as a result of digital competition. So you really need those news alerts to get people's attention to your site, which is where you can monetize.
But then you need to be more selective about the news alerts, or be more helpful to the public about how to filter those so that you're getting what you really want to get, and not baloney that we get too many emails. And so when you're getting baloney alerts, it makes you just want to unsubscribe.
I'd like to know more, too. Are we talking about all news? Are we talking about hard news? Because I can see, I mean, if we put it in context in this climate right now, we've seen that many people are, because of the flooding of the zone, many people are turning away from the news right now. So you could understand why they'd be shutting down those notifications and not wanting to hear anything that's breaking. They'll look at it when they want to. So I'd love to understand this and have a little more context and know exactly what they mean, for example, by news.
And not only are people turning off the news alerts or not signing up to them anymore, there are fewer and fewer people who are paying for news at all.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's actually a great detail that we can probably get into better next week. But here's the fact that 83% of Americans say they have not paid for news in the past year.
83%?
Just 17% directly paid or given money to a news source by subscribing or donating in the case of public media. Or becoming a member during that time. 17%.
And there's a very low number of people who will continue on. So once they can't get it, they might try a different way to see it. And if they can't, they just give up and don't read the story. And, you know, that's happened to me with some stories trying to see.
When you want to see a story, you hit a paywall, you just say, I've got plenty of other stuff.
I know how to fix it.
How's that?
You want people to start paying constantly? Okay. Every day you run this story. Naughty bears escape, steal a week's worth of honey, and take a long nap. This is
from the Washington Post.
From the Washington Post.
I thought that was AI when I first saw that.
It is not.
This can't be true.
It is not. That's a whole other subject we should get into, but just very quickly.
A zoo in London, right?
Yes. Goldilocks enters the home of three bears to eat their porridge and sleep in their beds, but at the Wildwood Devon Conservation Park in Britain, it's the bears who are doing the breaking and entering and sleeping.
And your point, David, about this wonderful
bit of
news?
This is your favorite term, golly, Martha, that says that, you know, while you're eating your post-toasties. You turn. Herman turns to Martha and says, "Golly, Martha, did you see Lucy and Mish, the young bears, escape their enclosure, stole honey, and fell asleep? Gotta read that one."
I hope the people who live nearby have a bear alert.
It's all good. All right, we are out of time for this week's edition of the Media Project. We're very grateful to you for joining in. Barbara Lombardo, Judy Patrick, and our producer, Dave Estina, and I'm Rex Smith. Thank you, folks. Hope you come back again next week for the Media Project.
Barely.
Papermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.